Hannah, the mother of Samuel, fascinates me, partly because Samuel is my own second name, and also because Our Lady chooses Hannah songs out of many alternatives, like the Song of Miriam, or the Song of Deborah, or even the Song of Naomi, to express her joy and gratitude before Elizabeth at the visitation. Why does Mary choose Hannah of all the women in the Old Testament? And part of the thing is because Hannah is not a straightforward heroine, as some translations might lead us to believe. There are all sorts of ambiguities in the Hebrew text that make of Hannah a very fascinating woman, and a very sad woman. She is beset by the expectations of society to produce a child, and she remains barren. She is mocked by her co-wife, and even the overwhelming love of her husband is not enough for her, because society regards her as useless, because her womb is closed to children. And here the text in the Hebrew Bible becomes very subtle. There is a thing in language called hendiades, the tendency to say one thing through using two actions. Get up and go in English is one of those, or stand up and fight, various phrases like that, or eat and drink to signify a meal. And many times the words eat and drink are translated as having a meal. But we are told here in 1 Samuel chapter 1 verse 7 that when Hannah went up to the house of the Lord, she did not eat. But previously the feast at the house of the Lord in Shiloh has been described in Hebrew as eating and drinking. She would not eat. And the story carries on in verse 9. So Hannah rose up after they had eaten in Shiloh, and after they had drunk. Now what's happened here is the normal hendiades, after having eaten and drunk, she got up, has been broken. It's broken in the Hebrew text. After they had eaten in Shiloh, and after they had drunk. And the insistence is that Hannah does not eat, implying that she does tipple a little bit, and especially mixed with her sadness and her bitterness in not being able to come before the Lord with children, everything is exacerbated. She becomes tremendously maudlin. She rises up and goes to the sanctuary in Shiloh. And verse 10 takes up, and she had a bitterness of soul, and prayed upon the Lord, and wept greatly. Many times in the text, this praying upon the Lord, and that's P-R-A-Y, not P-R-E-Y, upon the Lord is translated as praying to God, or praying before God, which happens a little bit later in the text. But the word is upon, like the waters upon the face of the earth, which gives us the mental image of Hannah throwing herself over the Ark of the Covenant, which at that point in Israel's history was still exposed to public devotion, throwing herself on the Ark of the Covenant, and drunkenly mumbling her sorrows in the hearing of the Lord, whose feet are upon the mercy seat of the Ark of the Covenant. And she makes her vow to bring the child to the Lord if she were to fall pregnant. And she carries on for quite a while, making promises to God And verse 12 then, and it came to pass as she prayed for a while before the Lord. So now one has this image of her having slidden off the Ark of the Covenant and being curled up as a sodden little heap in front of the mercy seat. And she speaks in her heart and her lips move, and a voice could not be heard. She has subdued into a drunken mumble. And so Eli quite rightly says to her, "Lady, how long are you going to sit here drunk like that? Please don't drink." And Hannah responds with the age-old response that every drunk who has ever knocked upon the presbytery door to ask for food replies with, and that is, "I am not drunk," or rather, "I'm not drunk anymore. I'm a woman of sorrowful spirit. I drank no one strong drink, but I poured out my soul before the Lord." The subtlety of the text makes it quite clear that Hannah is so overwhelmed by her pain, anguish, sorrow, and by social expectation, that she has taken to the bottle as a sort of consolation, but also as a sort of Dutch courage, so that she could come now and throw herself at God, pleading and promising the impossible, to give her child away, a child she has longed for so long, to simply give the child away when it is born. And so Eli judiciously simply sends her away with the blessing, "Let it be as you have asked for." And so it is, Hannah gives birth to Samuel, but delays. She does not bring the child back to Eli until the child is weaned, and it seems quite capable of walking and standing up on his own and talking, which means it's not immediately after the weaning. It's a bit of time has passed. Hannah is fulfilling her promise slowly and painfully. Having made the promise, she must now live up to it. And the child Samuel is given to Eli, and Hannah erupts in a song of triumph. A song of triumph which is voiced and quoted by Our Lady as she responds to Elizabeth's greeting. Why did Our Lady choose this woman of sorrow? This woman whose story would have been more clear to Mary than it is to us through layers of translators wanting us to think of Hannah as a heroine right from the very beginning, rather than a broken woman who discovers her dignity before God and then rejoices in that dignity, having overcome the oppressions of society within her own life. Why does Mary choose that song and not the song of a strong woman like Miriam or Deborah? Why does she choose the song of a weak woman who almost breaks her promise to God, but still fulfills that promise anyway? I think within Hannah's story there is a great deal for us to contemplate. There is a great deal for us to identify with. And there is a great deal for us to learn. To learn that we can throw ourselves nakedly, hurt, bruised, unhappy, bitter, and even slightly drunk upon the Lord. literally throw ourselves on the Lord and voice to the mercy seat the deepest desires of our hearts, even if they are accompanied by irresponsible promises. God understands this movement within the human heart, and in Hannah he embraces it, asking simply that we bring our raw selves to him, our slightly crazy selves, our bag lady selves before him, so as to understand and to have compassion with the devastations that others feel, that others experience, and not to judge too quickly the bag ladies or the drunks at our doors, but rather to realize that to throw ourselves on the mercy seat brings into our lives the fullness of God's mercy that allows us then to erupt in praise and thanksgiving for God, who has overcome unjust social expectations and who restores us as his beloved children to sing his praise. Mary, through her strange pregnancy, must have experienced social pressure, must have experienced some rejection for her to cling to Hannah's song, must have experienced it to the degree that she was willing to undertake alone a dangerous journey away from Nazareth and down to the south to be with her cousin Elizabeth. We often think that it's a grace of Our Lady to visit Elizabeth, and it could also be an act of desperation to get away from gossiping mouths and from the strange looks she was receiving as the baby swelled within her. Hannah is for us such a symbol of hope, bringing our vulnerable selves before God, as we are, confused, unhappy, uncertain, filled with a tendency to make rash and irresponsible promises. But once we place ourselves before God with that vulnerability, he raises us up and gives us strength. And more than that, we are often called to be the strength of those who cannot lift themselves up yet, of those who haven't experienced this marvelous grace of the mercy seat, open to the confused and to the slightly drunk and to the bitter, and to those who cannot feel love even if they are profoundly affirmed by those closest to them, that we are called to be their strength. We are called to be the people they can sing about triumphantly as having strengthened them and as having given them an experience of God's grace and uplifting love. And so in this year of mercy, for our cycle of ordinary time, to start with Hannah and Samuel's story is a profound grace. Let us learn from Hannah, our mother in faith, and the mother of Mary's faith. Amen.